when you have that attachment to going out and finding, sourcing materials and land and packaging them in pieces of wood and reclaimed wood, offcuts of birch and maple, that much attention and connection with the material, it feels really wrong to just pour it in a plastic cup and then, you know, move on.
Welcome to the Ripples of Radical Generosity podcast by Coralis, a global community of women and non-binary people making real progress on the world's to-do list. Together, we're transforming the world to become more equitable and sustainable.
Hi, Anang. I'm so happy to be with you. I'm MJ Ryan, and I'm one of the development guides for Coralis, and I had the honor of working with Anang, and I'm really excited about talking to you about your venture. So for those who may be new to our community, who don't know you or about Beam, can you just tell us a little bit about your venture and how you got started with it?
Yeah, my name's Anang Nguyen's Beam, and I'm a painter, mother, an artist from Cheyenne First Nation in Manitoulin Island, Ontario, Canada. And my venture, Beam Paints, Beam Paint and Color Incorporated, is a manufacturer of plastic-free art supplies. And that's watercolors and an increasing range of paint and coating products that are reimagined packaging and formulation-wise. And I got started because I wanted to increase the stability of my little family. At the time, I was a single mom and I had two young kids who were 5 and under. And I found myself reaching back into my roots and wanting to connect with my dad and things, time I spent with him. And so I started doing a lot of things that he showed me with my kids who were the same age by then that I was. And that turned into something that I was sharing on social media and that really just to a few people I knew. And then there was such a response, and especially when I started packaging it in a plastic-free way, that they started asking to buy paints and could I make more paints and could I do more colors. So it was really exciting.
Yeah. So can you describe actually what your paints, you make the, like when you say you manufacture them, it's not like you're a factory. Explain what you do, like how they're manufactured, how you actually make these plastic free paints and how you sell them.
Yeah.
And send them with the wood and all the beautiful beeswax. And I mean, there's a lot to what you're doing.
Yeah, there's a lot to what we're doing, and it's so material based and responsive to material that in the beginning when I started, people were requesting colors and I started making them to sell. I tried putting them in the standard way that paints were packaged, and it just really didn't feel like a match to spend that much time with the product, because we make paints right from raw material all the way, grinding stones and grinding rocks to make colors. So when you have that attachment to going out and finding, sourcing materials and land and packaging them in pieces of wood and reclaimed wood, offcuts of birch and maple, that much attention and connection with the material, it feels really wrong to just pour it in a plastic cup and then, you know, move on. And it also felt wrong later. It wasn't a fit to wrap it up in a plastic mailer. But it took time to figure all that stuff out, because I think when you start a business, you default into doing things how you think it's supposed to be done. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of copying what you've seen. And it was really fun to realize that probably my favorite part of the business has been reimagining different ways to approach packaging and formulation, and how to find plastic in a process and how to remove it. And that really leads to all kinds of interesting discoveries along the way, other companies, other people who are doing neat things in that field.
So when you're about to make, let's say, a red paint for your, what do you actually do? You go out to the land you live on and you find rocks? I mean, how do you actually make those things.
Yeah, that's kind of the starting point of it in a nutshell. The other thing is because we want to be ecologically responsible, so a lot of our stone content of our paints comes from the waste stream of quarry operations. Huh. So we don't have to go out and dig a hole and disturb an ecology or a landscape. We're kind of taking advantage of the fact that that's being done and these materials are getting lost. They're actually a hazard in the workplace of a quarry where they become airborne and breathing rocks is always bad. So we get to take them out of that environment and find a second life for them instead of being waste stream. So we do that. And then we also have incorporated that into all of our paint recipes. So it was really important as an Indigenous company to reflect some worldviews, but also that our foremost goal is to make the best paint in the world and to be able to stand behind the light, fast quality, the range of colors. And to do that, we really appreciate modern technology and advances. We do some amazing colors that we use synthetic pigments for, but also we knew it was really important to be responsible as far as the health effects of modern pigments. So we exceed Health Canada's requirements for paint by 3 times. So we're three times stricter on our products than the requirements for Health Canada. We joined Art and Creative Materials Institute very early, and I remember them being it was hard to find out how to communicate with them because they were so professional and they had gone to school for coatings and they understood the entire process in a different way. It took a long time to figure out how to interface with them, but they were so great in working with us when we were like the smallest company that had worked with them. And they helped us get all of our colors certified, ACMI approved. So that means that we can ship paints to schools, to daycares, to in California that has Prop 65. It's one of the strictest chemical laws in the world. So all of our paints meet those certifications and above.
One of the things that I know about you that I've experienced in our time together is that you are what I consider to be a true inventor. So you figure out how something is working, and then you think, how else could you do this and do this all this experimentation? And were you aware that you were good at that before you launched into this business and started doing it?
No, I don't think so. But I think that being raised by artists and also experiencing poverty probably really and also experiencing it as a child and then also as an adult. And I think when you're really below the poverty line and you have children, you are constantly looking for ways to be creative about what you have and how to get something done without what you need, you know, and finding different ways to do it. But this definitely, it has come, that was something that came out with our work together and conversations with you, was realizing that that was probably my strongest gift to my business, was to be able to make time to pursue that kind of thinking. It's definitely my favorite part, and to build a team that supports me and supports our operations so that I can think that way has been fruitful and a lot of enjoyment.
Yeah, because since we haven't worked together and you've created a team to do all of the back end stuff, you've started inventing all kinds of other things. Will you talk about that? What you've had some recent amazing projects. Talk about those.
Yes, absolutely. And so since we did that, I had a long-standing project that I didn't really have enough time to focus on. And almost right away after I implemented a lot of that, what we talked about together, I had more time to focus on my own experiments and inquiries. And that led to filing patents in Canada and the US for interior house paint. And that was the beginning of a branch of a lot of different products that came out of an innovative approach to using Canadian industrial hemp. So from that patent, it covers an exterior house paint, interior house paint, water-based paint, an oil-based paint, and also a textile ink and oil paints. So there was like a lot of applications for this one new approach that I got to develop. And it was really fun to file the patent and to have patents pending. So far we have that patent and two industrial design patents and one trademark pending. So it's exciting.
Yeah, and so you ended up with hemp, right? But tell us a little bit about the journey, about how you tried to start. You decided you want to make a non-toxic house paint for your own house.
Yeah, I did.
And then what happened? I remember all the substances, and tell us more.
Oh my God. It took a long time to go through that. And it was really, there were so many recipes that they were okay. They almost worked. Like there was a lot of flops.
And a lot of, remember, with milk, because that's a casein. And I remember conversations about casein as a substance. And
I was really broadly exploring a lot of different ways to approach this. And I looked into casein and protein. And it ended up being that I really read quite widely, looking for clues almost on how to move forward. I explored lignin and byproducts from the pulp and paper industry, and I really all kinds of tries and flops and paints that didn't work, and all kinds of patch tests all over my house in my workshop. Like I would just test it everywhere and it wouldn't work. And it was like really years of that. And I remember it crossing my mind. I thought, who do I think I am that I'm just going to invent this? And there's probably a good chance that I will never figure this out, because no one's figured this out. And I remember having that thought go by and then just thinking, well, why not me? You know, I probably think about paint more than the average person. So there's a good chance I could. And I kind of kept going.
It makes me think of so much about the famous quote attributed to Thomas Edison when he was trying to invent the incandescent light bulb. And he had tried 700 things that all didn't work. And somebody said to him, oh, you're a failure. You failed 700 times. Mm-hmm. And you know, who are you to think you can ever figure this out? And he said, I have not failed 700 times. I have not failed even once. I've succeeded in proving that those 700 ways don't work. And when I find all the ways that don't work, I will find the one that does. And I always think about you when I hear that.
Yeah, it was definitely that way. And it's also so remarkable to toil away on an idea. And I find that's really my joy. Is there's an incredible frustrating feeling when it doesn't work out. But there's also this really physical feeling for me of figuring it out, and it's coming together. And it was so amazing. I remember the day that it worked, and I was just by myself, but I knew what happened, and I knew what it meant for me, what it potentially meant for our company, and what it meant for the wider world to be able to offer an option. And it was just like a really ecstatic moment. And it's really something to be able to have that experience all by yourself, no one around. Yeah, it was amazing.
And so you landed on hemp. Tell us about that. What, why that, or what does it do that no one else has figured out?
Yeah, I came to hemp. I've been using hemp a lot in my own art practice. And when I was first pregnant with my second son, my first pregnancy, I had avoided painting entirely. And during that pregnancy, I had just really had a real breakthrough in painting, and I wanted to keep going. And somewhere I found in a book from 1852 about artists' approaches, they mentioned about hemp oil. And that's when I first started using it, because I could avoid solvents. And then it was more through exploring, coming back to that, And another piece of literature, like the internet, is just all so much to it. It's so easy to forget what a gift it is. But through that, I was able to find USDA and agriculture briefs from the 50s.
Hmm.
And I was reading these briefs about soy, and that led to kind of the approaching soy as an additive to industrial hemp that forms part of the basis of our patent. So it was kind of combining different older approaches.
That's cool. Yeah. So because your patent, what do you plan to do? I mean, I'm assuming you're going to get your patent, but So then what do you plan to do? Because you've got this whole artist thing, and now we have house paint. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'm just going to explore them. It's possible that they may separate into different ventures, and I could see that happening down the road, but for now we're just in-housing it all under one roof, and we've just started production and the sale of the paint just in the past 2 weeks. So
wow, congratulations.
Yeah.
And how are you packaging it, because I know packaging is always an issue for you and doing it completely plastic free? And
yeah it was. And it was interesting for me to explore that, because I started way out in like thinking about milk cartons and Tetra Paks and things like that. And then I found that the paint cans themselves were really recyclable, especially with a water-based paint. We ended up just going with regular house paint cans, and they have metal clips that go on the top that hold it. And then it goes inside a compostable bag. So that holds it just in case. So we had looked at other paint manufacturers who shipped paint, and that would have been a plastic bag with a zip tie. So we replaced the plastic bag with a compostable bag, and we have a beeswax cotton tie that, again, is the waste stream from our paint wrapping. So we use those. And then that goes into a mailer, and it goes UPS. So we're starting to ship out our first orders, and it's pretty exciting.
Oh, congratulations. Mm-hmm. I also heard that you now are in Indigo. Is that true?
We did a run in Indigo, and that was kind of a bit earlier in our journey. And I was just learning how we hadn't met yet. And it was that was probably the hardest point of the whole entrepreneurship journey so far, was dealing with the scaling of that. But it was interesting because we hadn't approached them. They came and asked us if we wanted to be there. And it was the beginning of understanding what the brand's ethics were. And that was interesting, because now I realize that the company has its own ethics that are really sacrosanct. And they came from me, but now they've become their own entity for the company. So at that time, Indigo had wanted to work with us, and they spelled out what was necessary as far as delivering at scale. And it involved polybags, double polybagging every single product. And we heard that, and we just instantly we declined to work with them. And I think that that really blew their mind, because they had come to us, they were definitely were expecting us to jump at it. And so when we said we don't do that, and they said, well, it's a requirement, and we said, okay, well, we won't be working together. And they came back and said, well, how would you do it then if you're not going to use a poly bag? And we suggested double layers of craft paper with a photographic sticker that represented the contents. And that worked great. We were the first company to move through their warehouses in a plastic-free way. And we retailed in 92 stores across Canada. And it was a really big success. We were the second highest selling product in their online store during our time there.
Wow.
So we sold through well, but it happened to be at the time in the pandemic when in-store shopping closed. So
they got...
Of paused. And then it was something we didn't pick up afterwards. We were focusing more on our own retail partnerships.
And one of the things that I always think is amazing about you, Anang, and you're so casual and about it, but every single year you've doubled your revenue, haven't you? Ever since you started.
Yes.
I mean, that's incredible. Congratulations. There's something about how you have grown into thinking about yourself as a business person. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's been a real journey. I've even kind of the last little bit, I've realized some interesting things about the company having become its own brand. I had one post recently where it was about my son and something he was doing. And it was interesting because the response of our followers was mixed, because what my son was doing wasn't quite a values fit to the company, but it was like a match for me as a person. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting to see and to realize that you can build something that comes so fundamentally from within yourself. But really, when it gets to this point, it's helping it become a functioning external organization, external to you. And that's really, really interesting.
Yeah. And part of how you did that is that you really embraced the idea that at some point you couldn't just be in the business, you need to be on the business, as they say. And that transition that you made, which many people don't do as successfully as you.
Thank you.
That was enabled the business to grow and for you to do some other things.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful to be able to get back to doing other things and to have a bit more peaceful downtime and to recognize the importance of that to the overall function of everything. I think I remember way back when it was just me making paint in the little garage, and I was reading all of these stories on ink and entrepreneur and everything. And one of them was a story about scaling. It was the first time I'd heard the term. And it was explaining what it was. And it said, if you're an artisan and you say you're an artisan chef that makes this specific kind of candy, and you're the only one who can do that, then the limit of the success of that business is how many you personally can do.
Yep.
But if you can teach somebody else how to make that and someone else can make it, then there's no limit to you have a business that can scale. And I remember thinking about that, like, oh, okay, well, that sounds good, you know.
And now how many people work with you?
Yeah, it's now about 9 to 11 people, all do different tasks. And the 9 to 11 are incredible people, the right people, people who enjoy the specific task. I have so much more appreciation for team building as so essential for everything to run properly, and that people understand and appreciate the aspect that they're in charge of and that they're controlling in the overall business. Yeah.
And creating this team has allowed you, as we said earlier, to create House Paint, but it's also allowed you this brain space to create another product that I remember seeing. We were on Zoom one day together and you showed me your nails.
Having other people handling all of the main aspects of the company gives me a lot of time to play and dream and tinker, I guess. And one of the things was I was really shy. My hands have always been really, they get overwashed and overworked, and I almost have like a doctor's hands where they get rashes from over soaping and washing. So I was quite self-conscious of all that, and I wanted to do my nails, but being in coatings, I just really disliked the smell and didn't want to have to do it with something I could never really get off. And one of the alleys of experimentation in House Paint involved a corn protein, and we ended up working through with this corn ingredient. I ended up with this little jar of stuff, and it wasn't House Paint. I was like, this is nail polish.
So even on the side, accidentally, you created nail polish.
Yeah.
non-toxic nail polish.
Yep. I have a non-toxic vegan nail polish that's made from corn, and you can remove it with rubbing alcohol. So it's a perfect nail polish for people who are a little skittish about, they don't want to use acetone-based nail polish remover, and they just don't want that. So we just found the container. It has a wood top and a recyclable polypropylene brush and glass bottle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's super cute. And I'm hoping to have it out this summer sometime.
Great. So people should look on your website this summer and hopefully it'll be there.
Yep, definitely.
Fantastic. And there's one other aspect to what you do that I had known you for a long time before you started talking to me about it. And that is that you yourself are a visual artist.
Yeah.
So you use your products, right?
Yep. And it's funny because I am definitely not a big self-promoter. It doesn't come up in conversations very often. But everything that I was making came out of my own personal practice as an artist. I supported myself for a lot of years, lean, skinny years on my paintings.
Wow. And
I continue to paint. I remember that the fullest that my life was when I also started the business while I had a full-time job.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so my full-time job was in the tape room and then doing data entry and then moving into the nuts and bolts of a community art museum. And so I would go there from 8:30 to 4:30, but I would work on paint in the morning, maybe 7 to 8, and then I would come home and work on paint in the evening. And at that point, I would get up quite early, maybe at 4. Or I had a partner who was really hardworking at the time, too. And he would get up really early and go off, and he was working in forestry. So there was this energy of early mornings and hard work and stuff. So that was I would get up at 4. I would go paint in my workshop. Then I would do my make paint for the business. Then I go to work and I come back, pick up the kids from the after school program, make supper, go make paint. Yeah, it was really full and unsustainable.
Yes, but often what is needed to start a business, when you say that, it reminds me of that's exactly how I started my business. And my stepkids were little, same thing, and yet I worked a full-time job, and then I edited books and published them on the side. It's one of the ways to bootstrap a business, right?
Yeah.
That relies on so much energy.
It does, but it really gave me I've retained 100% ownership of my company.
Which is so fantastic.
Yeah, and it's been really beneficial that I couldn't access regular capital in the beginning anyway. It really made that every decision the business was making, I couldn't have a vanity business, you know, like it couldn't be something that I liked and I was trying to produce at scale to force people to like or even encourage them. I needed them to encourage me to make it.
Perfect. That's so great.
Yeah. And then I knew it was the right thing.
It would sell. Yeah. You made sure there was demand before you made your product, which is a mistake that a lot of startup founders make, which is that they think they're making this great thing.
They love it.
The world's going to want it.
Yeah.
And they put it out there and nobody else wants it, as opposed to understanding what's the pull, not the push.
Yeah. And it, you know, for myself in a personal way, I love oil paint.
That's so interesting that you're not creating or didn't start there.
When I had started making oil paint, and kind of predictably, not really very many people wanted it. And that was what made me shift into watercolor, because I knew, and I like watercolor too, don't get me wrong. I really love it. But when it's my own personal practice, I'm more heavily on, granted, I do more watercolor painting now.
That's so great. Mm-hmm. Can you show us You're in your studio. Can you show us some of your work?
Yeah, I'm gonna occupy the frame so you don't see how messy the floor is. Turn this way.
That's an artist's prerogative, messy floor.
So there's one. It's like a boat and a camp. And let's see, if we're going this way, there's a painting with some deer.
Is there anything else you would like to talk about or emphasize or discuss today? Biggest thing you've learned on this whole journey?
Oh, wow. I think that it's a lot to do with paying attention to people and what people want versus what I want. And to think of it as being, I think I've had an easier time growing because I viewed what I was doing on the customer side and the employee and team side more as that I'm being of service and that I want to be serviceful. Oh, and then another great thing that I heard starting out, you can't try to not make mistakes because you're going to make mistakes. And especially with customers, like you make mistakes and people get mad and the only thing you can control is how you handle the mistake. So that's been really good. And we have kind of a customer service thing where everyone gets a slightly out of line customers once in a while.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
When we get those kind of people, we read it out loud. Then we say what we really want to say, like we say it out loud, and even my other staff do that too. They say it to the room and then we go and we compose like that. We're really sorry about that. We're really sorry you didn't realize our paint was paint, you know. Or
I did the exact same thing with my authors as a book publisher. They would say outrageous things. I would then say to myself or out loud, you know, all the things, uncensored things. Then I'd write or talk to them again with graciousness, right? It helps you get be more gracious if you can get out the other stuff, right?
And we also really kind of go with generosity. There's so much of a payback to generosity that you don't really do it to get that return, but it just seems to happen that way. That I've found so many of our really dedicated people who turn into long-term customers are people who approached us with a certain amount of hostility over a totally like odd event, and we just either let them keep the paint, or we returned them, or we just handled it over and above, which is hard when somebody's calling you names. And then you know, they would be so surprised at that they just turn around and become long-term bean painters.
It's such a powerful lesson for us all, right? When we meet hostility with love, often it helps dissolve hostility, right?
Yeah. And the other thing too, when I first started out, I would give people a sample color for free. And it was amazing. The difference in customer service that I had to do before that was really, there was a lot. Any small issue, people would send in, oh, this, and what about that? And there was a lot of like customer service issues. And then as soon as I started giving a free color or a free sample with every order, like exponentially went down.
Fascinating. Yeah. So if people want to stay up to date with your work, your latest products, and even maybe your art, where can they find you?
Okay, they can find us at beanpaints.com is our website, and our Instagram is at beanpaints.
Wonderful. Thank you. Well, I really appreciate your taking the time with us today. And it's such a pleasure to have you in our community and to watch you grow. And it's an honor to have accompanied you on a little piece of the journey too.
Oh, it's been great. It's great to get to know you, and I'll see you soon.
Definitely, I will.
Thank you for listening to the Ripples of Radical Generosity podcast. Let us know what you thought of the episode and share this podcast with your friends. We invite you to join a global community of radically generous women and non-binary folks at www.corliss.world.